We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
In 2003, Nike signed 13-year-old Freddie Adu to a seven-figure contract. But Freddie didn't live up to the hype. He has turned down every single documentary project looking closely at the details of his career. Until now.
People are going to look at everything you did because of the hype surrounding your arrival and what they think you can be.
I'm Grant Wall, and this is American Prodigy, Freddie Adu, from Blue Wire Podcasts.
Blue Wire.
The Chicago Bulls select Kobe White.
LaVine with the runway!
Over.
Up or get out the way, Trae Young.
Welcome to Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. We're on the Blue Wire Network. We're brought to you by Indeed and Bet Online. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. I'm here as always with Jason Pat. And we have a special guest joining us, in my opinion, the sharpest Bulls writer on the internet. It's Stefan Noh. Stefan, thanks for taking some time out of your day to talk to us about the Bulls with the season set to begin on Wednesday against the Atlanta Hawks. Preseason is wrapped up for the Bulls. And yeah, we're about to get into it. So I guess I'll just start this off by asking you guys a question. How excited are you for this season right now? And Jason, your dog can speak too if it wants to.
That's Chris Dunn in the background. Just dogs, even though he's not on the Bulls anymore, just I guess that kind of is funny with the Hawks coming up, even though I'm pretty sure Chris Dunn is not playing. But Stefan, I'll let you answer this first.
Scale of 1 to 10, where's your excitement level for the new season? We'll put it that way.
I would say my excitement level is probably like a 7, which going into last season, it was probably, I mean, I guess last season we had higher expectations, but it still was probably only like a 5. And then the year before that, it was like a 2. So 7's pretty high. Yeah, I think that, you know, I think it's going to be a little bit of a downer because the season starts so tough. But I've enjoyed watching the preseason games. I think Patrick Williams is super intriguing and interesting. So I'm looking forward to this season a lot more than the previous ones.
As for me, I kind of am too. Even, I know last season, like we both of us, we like talked ourselves into the Bulls being good. I know Ricky was on team playoffs. I was just short there. So like, I think we were both like kind of super excited for last season. We even kind of talked ourselves into Boylan, which was awful. Obviously just stupid. We learned the error of our ways really, really quick there. And this season, I would say pretty similar. Like I think what, even though I don't think this team is going to be that good, I feel like you said, I think my expectation level for this season is probably a little less. Like you mentioned the hard schedule. I think the East in general is just kind of might be a bit better this season. So I'm expecting basically to hopefully get into the play-in tournament. That's whatever, seeds 7 through 10, something like that. But I'm just kind of excited just to see the new coaching staff with Billy Donovan, some competence as a head coach, the new front office, see what they do after, we'll see how the team does. And then just like some of these guys, like, we're going to talk about this in a second here with Lauri Markkanen not signing a contract extension. Like, it's a big season for him. Put up or shut up, however you feel about Lauri Markkanen. Like, It's a contract season for him. Coby White and Zach LaVine playing together and starting together. I'm excited to see how they do. We have our concerns and questions about them, but they're obviously pretty fun to watch together, even if they have their flaws. Wendell Carter Jr. maybe a breakout season, maybe not. His preseason was not very good, but like, just I'm kind of excited. And then you mentioned Patrick Williams as well. I'm just kind of excited to see how these young guys come together in a season that could kind of determine the direction this new front office goes. Like, if it kind of crashes and burns, well, maybe they'll just blow everything up and they'll kind of start fresh. But maybe they'll actually come together and they're fun and they're maybe not good, but at least, like I said, right there, maybe for a playoff spot, the play-in tournament. So I think even if the team, my expectations aren't super high, I'm still kind of excited to just watch these young guys play with this, with a new coach and a competent coach.
Yeah, so I think we should move on to Lauri Markkanen. And Jason, there was a bunch of early extensions signed around the league today. Lauri Markkanen did not get one, is not going to get one. And you mentioned sort of the stakes of the season at the top of the podcast. So you want to walk us through the news of the day and talk about what's going on with Lauri right now?
Yeah, so they had till 5 p.m. to sign an extension on his rookie contract, and it did not happen. And it was kind of reported... I guess just going back, like even just after year three, which was a disappointing year three for Lauri Markkanen, obviously, like I feel like most people figured like it would just be hard for, especially with the new front office in place, like why would they commit to somebody they didn't draft? They like have no, they just don't really have anything to owe Lauri Markkanen. So like after a bad season, he's been hurt and it just wasn't good. Like why would they go pay up for Lauri Markkanen? And for him, like he's, I mean, why would he take a discount when he could possibly get a lot more money next offseason? And that's especially the case now that like so many, that the 2021 like hyped free agent class is much weaker now. And we still, as you mentioned, we did see some extensions. We saw Jonathan Isaac, who tore his ACL. He's going to be out this whole season, but he got 4 years, $80 million. Obviously Jonathan Isaac, defensive player of the year caliber player when he's healthy. He has not been healthy that much, but still $20 million a year for him. That's a lot. We saw Markel Fultz, another Magic guy. He's got almost $17 million a year after the disastrous start to his career. We saw Luke Kennard, $464 million. Derek White, $473 million, I think. Were there any other ones there? I can't remember. Those were some of the main ones. I know guys who didn't, like John Collins and the Hawks didn't. Lonzo didn't.
OG got one, too.
OG got $472 million, that's right, which I think a lot of people thought that that was low for him. I think a lot of people were thinking... up to like the 80, maybe even 90 marks. So the fact that he only got 72 is kind of interesting. So yeah. So again, I always kind of felt like it was going to be hard for them to get common ground there. I know they talked about how Lowry was like, "Oh, I pushed my agent for an extension," and our AK was talking about, "Oh, we like Lowry. We'd like to get something done." They obviously, and Casey said they were never close. There's a few places reported they just were never close on this, which just doesn't surprise me that much. Like, Not common ground there. So, I guess, Stefan, looking at, like, were you surprised at all that they did not agree to an extension? And, like, what do you expect out of Lowry? What do you think of him as a player now? Because just, like, what we've seen of him, we just have not seen him develop as we'd hoped. He just hasn't shown, like, that many plus NBA skills outside of, like, free throw shooting. Like, do you want him to be a long-term piece on this team? What would you, like, be willing to pay him if he's like, has, like, a decent season? Just, like, where are you on the whole Lowri Markkanen situation right now?
Well, I was not surprised that they did not come to an agreement because both sides kind of have different incentives. So when I think about Lowry, like I think that if I was going to extend him, the years would probably be more important to me than the salary, because the scary thing about him is that, I mean, we still really don't have a great idea of what kind of value he's going to bring. You can make the argument that you do know, and he's just not that good, which I think is totally fair. But for people who are still holding out, I mean, like, yeah, maybe you do want some more time. So I can't remember off the top of my head what Kuzma's extension was. I think it was
340.
Like,
340, I think.
Yeah, I think it was 340 with like a third year player option, which like that type of framework for Lowry, I think I would be okay with. Just not locking yourself in case he is really bad. And the other reason why I kind of like that is you have to think about what the alternative is going to be. So I think that Lowry probably is going to get paid this summer because the free agency class is just so terrible. And all these teams have been saving up money for Giannis and these other guys. And there's a lot of money in the market and there's not a lot of supply, then, I mean, you get guys like Otto Porter getting paid. He's probably going to get paid again this summer just due to like dumb luck timing. So that's kind of why I don't think they could, let's say they give Lowry like $18 million a year or something. I don't think they could spend that better just going on the free agent class this summer. So like a short-term deal, I think I'm okay with, but I'm not thrilled with. Yeah, and I just think that I was one of these guys who was way, way higher on Lowry when he was a rookie, when he was doing well under Hoiberg. But at this point, like, I think he just kind of is who he is. There's a lot of variance in three-point shooting, but we have a lot of data now. I mean, he's taken a ton of shots. I think friend of the podcast, Kevin Farragut, said you only need like 200 shots or something to get a good idea of what a guy shoots from three. So we have way more attempts with Lowry.
He's over 1,000, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like he's an average three-point shooter, and I don't really see any reason other than wish casting why you think that he would suddenly turn into like a 40% three-point shooter. So that's what he needs to do in order to be a really good player, because he's not really fast enough to beat guys off the dribble unless they're closing out super hard on him, and he's not going to get those closeouts unless he's just lights out as a shooter. So yeah, I mean, I just I hope he proves me wrong, but I am very, very lukewarm on Lowry right now.
So I feel like the risk is like the thought of losing him for nothing versus giving him a deal that's maybe a little bit of an overpay, but then you can potentially trade him down the line. Now, if he has another year like last year, suddenly that a long-term contract could look like an albatross. And the team, even though he is still really young, might think that, oh, that's not really a positive asset for us in a trade. Then the Bulls get stuck with him. So sort of how do you rationalize those two thoughts, Steven? Like, do you think it's like the worst thing possible to lose him for nothing? I kind of thought maybe they should have traded him in the offseason for this reason. I do think that Karnišovas likely gauged the market given how many rumors the Bulls were in secondhand. But obviously Lowry's still on the team coming into the season. He did have a good last preseason game. I'm just sort of curious what you think in terms of losing him for nothing via, you know, the risk of an overpay.
Yeah, I posed this question to the group DM before we started recording, where Lonzo also didn't get an extension. So, like, money is the same at this point, right? It doesn't matter if the guy was on your team or not. I guess you might have a slight advantage in negotiating if the guy's restricted, because you get to see what other teams are going to pay him. But, I mean, if I had to allocate, you know, $17 million a year to Lowry or to Lonzo, it doesn't matter to me that Lowry has been on the team the last couple of years. I would just pick who I think is the better player. And personally, I mean, I don't know, both those guys are so flawed, like you might just go with neither and just wait until, I haven't even looked at like who the 2022 free agents are, but yeah, I mean, I definitely wouldn't give him like 4 years at a huge number. It's just like, I'm just not doing that. But it might just, as frustrating as it is seeing the Bulls just keep on sitting out these free agency periods, that might actually be like the most prudent course of action.
Yeah, I kind of agree. And like when you look like Lonzo, like at least Lonzo is like a legitimately great passer. Like it just comes back to me with Lowry is that he's just like not good at anything. Like he's okay at a bunch of stuff, but like again, outside of like free throw shooting, he's not a versatile defender. Can't protect the rim. Can't really depend on him to like switch on like guards and wings and like be really good. Like he's okay at it. And again, we talked about the shooting, like all these catch and shoot threes, that he's just an average 3-point shooter. He's not a playmaker. So just like, at least Lonzo, you can count on something with his playmaking and like his ability in transition. So that's what just makes it tough with Lowry. Just right now, he just seems like just a totally average player, which is like, it's fine. Like you could use him as a role player, but I just see it in terms of like paying up. It's just really tough. I guess to finish up on Lowry here, did you see anything in the preseason that you thought, oh, you know, like is Billy Donovan using him differently? Is he being a bit more aggressive? Just, I know the big criticism was that Boylan misused him. He was just basically like a floor spacer. He wasn't aggressive enough. Have you seen anything in this preseason that just like makes you think that he can actually make any type of leap at all, like in terms of aggressiveness, in terms of how Billy Donovan's using him?
Well, I think that the time for excuses for him is over, because I do think that he had some legitimate gripes with the way Boylan was using him. And his role has changed, at least through the preseason. Like, he is coming off movement a lot more. And I don't even know if he can shoot well off movement, because, I mean, like, basically all he's been for his whole career is a spot-up shooter. Like, he hasn't really done any pull-up stuff. Like, he was coming off screens with Hoiberg, I guess he shot like pretty well that rookie year. So maybe that's a sign that he can do it. But yeah, like no more post-ups, which is nice. Seems like he is a little bit more aggressive. Like they're having him attack a little bit more. I do really like that Donovan has put him in this 5-4 pick and roll with Wendell Carter quite a bit. And that play has been very successful. So that's kind of cool, I guess. Like we did see flashes of that the last couple of years where we were wondering if Lowry could do some of that. So that's another reason why I think the season might be a little bit more interesting than the previous ones. Like you get to see these guys expand a little bit. But yeah, if he doesn't get it done this year, I mean, he's got nobody to blame but himself.
Totally agree. Before we move on to some of these other guys in the roster, we're going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsors, Indeed and BetOnline. 2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world with more total visits than any other job site, according to ComScore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria. And you can contact them the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. 73% of online job seekers in the U.S. are visiting Indeed each month, according to ComScore's total visits. So it's clear Indeed can help get you the quality hire you need. That's why more than 3 million businesses worldwide use Indeed for hiring. So right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it and fast. So try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. This offer is valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply. Football is back in full swing. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take full advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at BetOnline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. We are back. Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. We got Stefano on. We're talking about the Bulls as they get prepared for their season opener on Wednesday against the Atlanta Hawks. We just talked about Lauri Markkanen and no contract extension for him. Let's go talk about some of the rest of the roster. Let's go to the backcourt with Coby White and Zach LaVine. We kind of mentioned them kind of at the top here about how they'll be starting to play together or for the first time in the starting lineup. Coby started the one game last year. He obviously was a lot of fun as a player off the bench after the All-Star break, got buckets. We saw him get buckets in preseason, but the big thing I know that we've all been looking for was, can Coby White actually play an effective point guard? Can he make the reads? Can he make anything past just basic pick and roll reads? And I know that's something you've been looking at in your preseason analysis. So just what did you see out of Coby White as the starting point guard? Do you think he can run an effective offense with him and Zach LaVine in the backcourt? Is there enough playmaking there to give the Bulls an offense that can actually not be like 29th in the league like they were last season?
Well, the thing with Coby last year is he was so streaky and so inconsistent. And I think that extends not only to his shooting and his scoring, but so many aspects of his game. So in the four preseason games, he was pretty terrible in the first game. He was better in the second game. He was very good in the third game. And then he was terrible again in the fourth game. And not just his shooting followed that pattern. But I think that he lets his shooting affect other parts of his game too. His passing was just very, very bad. The thing that I want to see with Coby is, first of all, he needs to finish at the rim a lot better. Like, he's just so mechanical when he plays. And he seems, Will Gottlieb, friend of the podcast, mentions this a lot, that he just seems to make up his mind on what he's going to do before he does it. So he says, like, I'm going to look for guys to pass on this possession, or I'm just going to like try to finish over this guy when he gets the ball at the 3-point line. And you just can't do that at the NBA level. Like, you have to be able to read defenses and adjust, because he's not the type of player that can just impose his will like that. So I want to see him, just read the game better, you know? And he's had flashes. I think he has gotten better, but not to the level where he needs to be, where, you know, he's going to be even like an average starting point guard.
In Zach Lowe's Bulls preview today, or like NBA-wide preview, the Bulls just had one paragraph, I think, in the entire thing. And here's what it was. It said, is it weird that I might peg the Bulls as the most likely among Chicago, Orlando, and Charlotte to bust the East play-in party? They are starting Kobe White at point guard. That's a real thing. So I feel like this is going to be the biggest swing factor in the season, is how does Kobe White adjust to point guard? I think that, you know, the Bulls, when you talk about like the front court foundation of Markkanen and Carter, it is sort of fair that like they have never had a natural facilitator since they've been in Chicago. They've never had like a true engine of the offense. LaVine had those duties last year and he just wasn't a good enough decision maker on a consistent basis to handle the job. Now Kobe's taking on that burden. And I think like you can say a lot of the same things about Kobe that you can about LaVine. Both are obviously really great scorers, can shoot off the dribble from distance, can really get cooking offensively, but it's just like the decision making I feel like is a just such a huge issue for both of them. So how do you think that Kobe should start at point guard, Stefan? Do you think they should start Satoransky? And how do you think the point guard situation and the lead playmaker sort of impacts the rest of the roster?
I don't know what's going on with Satoransky. He still is not with the team with this following some sort of protocol. I mean, it sounds like COVID, but then the NBA said only one guy tested positive, and that was...
Vonleh?
Sorry. Yeah, it was Vonleh. So, apparently Satoransky doesn't have it, but he has some sort of condition that cannot be disclosed that is exactly like COVID in terms of like where he can be with the team. And so I don't think he's gonna, I mean, it sounds like he's not gonna be ready for the season opener, but I'm not really sure. If it was up to me, I mean, I understand why they don't want to play Satoransky, why they don't want to start him. I mean, he is like a very limited player. I was like the lead driver of the Satoransky train last year. And I thought that he played better than he was given credit for, but yeah, like you're not getting above average starting play from him probably. But I do think that they're making a mistake by just trying to throw White out there. I mean, White is really good at certain things. Like he's just a lights out shooter. He's actually like extremely effective off the ball, just like spreading the court, and he does not need a lot of space to get his shot off from three. And he's probably the player I trust the most if you just have a wide open three to hit it. So I think that I would rather have him in an off ball role. I understand why they're playing him at the point guard though. They just don't have anyone else, you know? So like, why not just see what happens, you know? But I'm not hopeful for what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's basically me on that. It's like, we saw what Satoransky was. He's fine. Like, I think he could be decent in the bench role. And we kind of saw him play pretty well in that first preseason game when the Bulls starters got their ass kicked. Like, he came in and did a decent job. I know it was preseason against a shitty Rockets bench, but like, I don't know. I just, you might as well. Like, in this season, like, they called this supposed season of evaluation. I guess you might as well just start Kobe White and see what he's got. It could certainly go poorly. I mean, your point about him off ball, like, I mean, he's such a good shooter in like spot up situations. I always feel really good about him hitting shots, and we've seen it in preseason. He shot the ball really well, except for one game. So I don't know. Yeah, that's definitely gonna be a huge thing. Did you want them to go? I feel like you talked about maybe Ricky Rubio. Like, were you surprised that they didn't make a move for another veteran point guard?
Yeah, I mean, I think they probably looked, but they just couldn't find anything that worked for them. So I think it's definitely going to be an area that they address this offseason or perhaps at the trade deadline. So, I think they're just kind of like stuck in a tough place right now because the options they had this year to upgrade at that position were not great. So they just had to roll with what they had.
Stefan, long term, do the Bulls need to make a decision between Zach and Kobe? Is a backcourt with both of them in it tenable? Kobe, maybe you could just use him as like your sixth man, a bench guy, upgrade a point guard while still keeping them together in a sense. Or do you think that, for the long term growth of the franchise, one of them likely has to go?
Well, I don't think it's a decision between Zach or Kobe. I think it's Zach and Kobe. Like, I don't think that any of these guys are really safe. That's why I think this season is more interesting than the previous ones. I feel like the Bulls, in terms of franchise building, are at a real inflection point. That doesn't really happen that often with franchises. So it is pretty interesting when you can watch and see, like, there's just so many different directions that AK can take this roster. And I think they're really benefited too by the fact that, you know, they didn't pick these players, and the endowment effect that the Bulls have so often, where they put so many resources into scouting these guys and then they just like kind of fall in love with them, that's not going to hold this regime back. So I think that it's very likely that like both of those guys are gone, right? And they just like build around Patrick Williams and whoever else. Like, maybe, you know, maybe they like Hutchison, maybe they keep him as like a back end rotation guy, or I don't know. But like, just every single player on this roster besides Patrick Williams, I think, is, I cannot really say that, you know, they're for sure going to be on this team in 3 years.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. Let's use that as a good jumping off point to talk about Patrick Williams, Bulls rookie, number four pick. Played pretty well in the preseason, and I know you wrote a few things about him. You were watching him closely, both ends of the floor. I know I was pleasantly surprised to see some of the stuff we saw offensively. I know defensively, some nice versatility as well. You wrote about him, I think, sticking John Wall a few times on switches, making some nice, just, I know he came in a league hyped as like a good rim protector at his position. We saw Patrick Williams start the last two games at small forward over Otto Porter Jr. I don't believe a decision has been made on that yet, but it seems like Billy is thinking about it. So I guess just we can talk about, do you think Patrick Williams should start at the three, or I guess do you think he actually is a small forward? I know positions in the NBA these days, it's kind of like whatever. He's kind of just more like a big wing, but do you think he should start over Otto Porter Jr.? And what did you like most out of him in preseason? And what do you think he still has to really work on?
I don't know about starting him. Like, I'm fine with starting him. I do think that he needs to play a lot of minutes, and they have to restrict Otto's minutes a lot because they really need to trade Otto Porter. They need to get something for him, and he's so fragile that you just have to keep him on a minutes restriction and hope that he stays healthy by the trade deadline. I think like last year they probably wanted to trade him too, but he got hurt, you know? So
yeah.
What was the second part of your question?
His preseason performance. What really stood out to you in his preseason performance? And then if there's anything that you really saw that he really needs to work on as well.
What stood out to me was his, this was mentioned in all of his draft stuff, but just seeing it in person, his defensive versatility. Like, you mentioned that he matched up well against John Wall. I think three times in that first game, he got switched on him and Wall tried to shake him and he stayed in front of him, which was better than like the Bulls point guards were doing. I mean, Wall was torching everybody else on the team. So that was very impressive. And then when they played the Thunder, he got switched on to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander a bunch of times. And I think Shai got him once. I think it was Shai that got him once with that pump fake. But the other times, he stayed in front. And that's really hard to do against Shai because he has such great shake. You know, it's got all this craft. So that was very impressive. And then he was guarding up and down their roster, which, I mean, that's like the that's a skill that everybody's looking for in the draft, right? And the thing that I kind of wanted to see more of from him is, I think he only had two assists in the
preseason. A lot of turnovers.
Yeah. And yeah, that was in the last game where he had those two assists. And yeah, Jay, as you said, a lot of turnovers. So the turnovers are fine though. Like, you know, he's got to work through things. Like the thing that bothers me more about Wendell, for example, is he doesn't have enough turnovers passing. He just holds the ball so often. He won't go for passes. You know, that's what the preseason is for. You got to try this stuff out. But yeah, with Patrick Williams, I would like to see him try riskier passes. Most of his turnovers came when he was ball handling and like trying to drive and stuff like that. So yeah, like he was, Ricky can speak to this better than I can, but his passing was supposed to be a pretty big asset. I just saw some highlight videos and his highlights were awesome passing, but I haven't really seen that in the preseason as much. He's thrown a couple of whip passes and stuff like that, but nothing too crazy. So Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that because I think we're going to see some like pretty cool highlights.
Yeah, he did throw some nice passes in terms of his best passes of the season at Florida State, but also like he wasn't really in a position to put the ball on the floor and create much. And I feel like that live dribble passing ability is really what's valuable, especially if he's able to be a guy who like demands the attention of the defense when the ball is in his hands. I was really impressed with his on-ball scoring ability. Like I tweeted out a few clips of him, you know, going between his legs a couple times, being able to pull up from mid-range. Those were all really good things. I also liked that he seemed ready and willing to fire from three-point range. Had a little bit of a step back in his game already. So I'm really impressed just with his overall scoring package. And my impression of Patrick Williams through four preseason games is that he's pretty easily the best-looking long-term prospect on the team currently. And I was a big fan of Wendell Carter coming into this season. I'm sure we'll move to Wendell in a minute here, but I would have given him that mantle before the Patrick Williams pick. And I just got to say, like, I'm thrilled with the Patrick Williams pick. Like, there were other guys who I probably would have taken there, but I'm already fully on the Patrick Williams bandwagon. I think he looks great. I think he looks like the Bulls' best long-term piece already. Curious of what you guys think to that or if I'm overreacting a bit.
I definitely think so.
Yeah, I would say it's nice to have possibly like a legit two-way player. It's been a clear issue for the Bulls in recent years, just like the lack of guys who can play both ends of the court, because obviously Zach, great scorer. Can he play defense? He hasn't. Kobe White's kind of the same thing. Lauri Markkanen, I mean, obviously he hasn't really been good at anything. Wendell's been more of a defensive guy, and his offense has sucked. Chris Dunn, all defense, no offense. Like, there's been so many guys at the head that can't play both ends. And I think that's kind of what we're hoping for out of Patrick Williams, and just kind of with his skill set and what he's shown already, and just like his NBA ready body and just the versatile wing factor that is very popular. You need these guys to win in today's NBA. Like, definitely very promising. Stefan, you could definitely go add more to that.
No, I really like what you said. You know, he just doesn't take anything off the table. I mean, all the Bulls picks that they've made, you know, Chandler Hutchison, the guy can't shoot. He can do other stuff really well, but he can't shoot. You know, Denzel can't play defense. Bobby Portis can't play defense. Like, all these guys, you're just capping their ceiling already from day one. And having a prospect like Pat Will, where he's showing promise in a lot of things, and there's no one area where you know he's just going to suck, right? I mean, I think that's pretty valuable. You're just giving yourself different avenues for him to be really good. You know, when you shut down a couple of those avenues, just like probabilistically, you're reducing your chances of success so much. So just having all those avenues open, I think is very exciting. I mean, I'm just really looking forward to watching him.
And how about the fact that depending on what happens with Pukaševski in OKC this season, is he going to be on the roster or not? Patrick Williams is going to be the youngest player in the NBA. So that's pretty exciting. I mean, just the fact that the Bulls didn't take like a McDermott or Valentine type, who was a four-year college player, they actually took the youngest player. To me, that is just such a massive improvement in process. Like, we'll see how the results work out. Honestly, it's not a very high bar to clear at this point to be the best young player on the Bulls. And his preseason already was like one of the most impressive preseason runs of any of the rookies. I was paying attention to all of them, so I'm thrilled with Patrick Williams, and I'm really excited to see what he can do this season. Stefan, do you have any things you would like to see from his season? I know you said that you think he should play a lot, that he should get a lot of, you know, reps. Is there any other like goals you would set for Patrick Williams' rookie year?
Not really, just like kick ass. Like, I think he's going to be awesome. Like, the small flashes that we got in preseason were already better than most of the other guys who are, as you said, way older than him. So I am looking forward to, I read some profile on him where it said that, I think it was Spencer Perlman at the Stepien, said that he tries to dunk everything in sight. And I hadn't really seen that as much. He did try to do one like crazy dunk on a cut that he got fouled on, but I'm looking forward to having that like David Nwaba type of player again, where, you know, even if the chances of success are very low, he just tries to like slam it down everybody's throat.
Well, Lowry does that too, Stefan, but he just
and he fails all the time.
In the preseason, again, he misses more dunks than anyone I've ever seen. So,
well, probably not Bobby Portis. Bobby Portis missed a lot of dunks.
Good Lord. And I guess also just with the minutes thing, like, I think if this thing like goes bad with this bad schedule from the start, That's when you like, yeah, if you looked to trade out a Porter, maybe you think you like bench Lowry too. I mean, basically just start giving Patrick Williams all the minutes, like play him 30-30. I know he'll hit that wall, but they definitely, like, I don't know how much he'll play at the very start. Like, he should have a rotation place, but like, if this thing goes bad to start, like, I just want to see all the Patrick Williams for like the rest of the season. You start making moves kind of to focus around him. Moving on, let's talk about Wendell. Ricky, you brought up Wendell kind of to talk about him, and we've talked about a lot on this pod about how we wanted to see Wendell Carter take on more of a role in the offense, whether that's being that offensive hub at the elbows, whether it's shooting threes. Well, we did see more of that in preseason. He took 4 threes a game in preseason, and he only made one of them, or 4 threes per game, yeah, so 16 total. He only made one of them. I know Billy Donovan, they asked Billy Donovan about that today, I think at practice, and he's like, you know, like, I wouldn't be opposed if he shot that many, but obviously he only made one of them. I think he did seem to lose some confidence in his shooting and just kind of his overall play. Once he started bricking all those, which obviously that's something that just can't happen. We can't have Wendell not looking at the rim and passing up open looks. Like, he's got to keep that confidence. You'd hope to think that 3-point shooting will come up at some point, maybe it won't ever be good, but you would hope to get it up to like into the 30s in percentage wise. And then obviously in terms of the passing, I think stuff you mentioned earlier just now about how you'd like to see him be a bit more ambitious with his passing. We did see a few nice things there with him. I know one of those early games, he had a nice back cut pass to Zach for a dunk, and it's that kind of stuff. Because the whole thing was that, well, Wendell has been misused by Jim Boylan. With Billy Donovan, they're going to use him a bit more. I do think we've seen him used maybe a bit better, but the results still just haven't been there. I don't want to give up on him right now after 4 preseason games. He still hasn't played that many games because, like Lowry, he's kind of dealt with some injury issues. So, Stefan, what did you make of Wendell's usage in the preseason? Are you worried about his shooting? Do you think it'll ever come around?
Well, yeah, I'm massively worried. He had a terrible preseason. And as far as his shooting, I'm not like totally out on it, but I mean, the numbers are the numbers. Like, what did he shoot? Yeah. Like 1 for 15 or something in the preseason?
1 for 16.
and the shots, the misses were not particularly close either. I mean, it's not like these shots were rimming in and out. I mean, he was pretty off on a lot of them. So he was only taking very open shots too. And by the third game, he was passing up everything. Like, the problem with the Bulls offense the past couple of years, I think they were 29th last year in offense, yep. Is they're playing these guys that are total offensive zeros. So they're playing like Dunn and Shaq Harrison and Wendell Carter and Chandler Hutchinson together. And what it does is it just makes defenses collapse into the paint, and they're just daring you to shoot it. So if you have even one of those guys now, I mean, so many teams are playing five out. So many teams are spacing the floor so well. And that's how you get these historic offenses. Offensive rating is going up every single year in the NBA because teams are just getting so much better. And you can't do that when you just allow defenses to play 5-on-4. It's just not going to work. So he has to be a threat out there somehow. I mean, if that means that he's going to be in the dunker spot and just be a beast inside, then he can do that. But again, like, it's another problem area in the preseason. He did not finish very well at the rim. So he has to do something offensively. And I mentioned before his passing, he missed so many cutters in the preseason. And I know that he can make these passes because I saw him do it at Duke. I don't understand exactly why. I can see him making eye contact with these guys, but he's afraid to let go of the ball. I just think I don't know why, but he's afraid to make mistakes. And hopefully it comes around. I mean, I'm not hopeful that it happens like in the beginning of the season because he just has so much work to do, but maybe like by the middle part, this is like a totally different approach than he was used to with Jim Boylan, where if he made mistakes before, Jim Boylan sat him one game during his rookie years. He played like 7 minutes and Boylan told him, like, sometimes you learn by watching from the bench or something like that, right? Something stupid like that, where you know, they won like 7 games that year. Like, who cares? Just let Wendell play. But yeah, Billy Donovan is just pumping him up. He said, like, Jay, as you said before, like, if Wendell takes 4 threes a game, that's fine. So we'll see if the different approach yields different results.
Yeah, I'm starting to get really nervous about him because offensively, he just sucks. Like, what is he good at offensively? And he's never really shown in the NBA that he's talented with the ball in his hands. And that's what keeps tripping me up. Like, I loved Wendell as a prospect, for a big reason why is because of how he paired with Marvin Bagley at Duke. They did a lot of high-low stuff. I thought that he looked like he was going to be a projectable shooter going forward. He was going to be a plus passer. But, I mean, it's the third year in the NBA. He hasn't really shown that. I think that absolutely he has a huge gripe with Boylan. I think that Lowry and Carter both are still just like traumatized from the Boylan experience. And you hope that doesn't stick with him. But at the same time, it's on the players to like get over it, to be like, you know, next play guys. You hear about that when you talk to scouts all the time. Some guys linger on a bad play or a bad decision for too long. Other guys, Kawhi, I've heard this about, for example, they just move on right away. Next play guy, the last result doesn't affect them. So I'm starting to get worried about Wendell's offense for sure. Stefan, you just wrote a big thing on the Bulls' defensive changes. And, you know, I think that center, most important defensive position, the defensive changes will impact Wendell probably more than they'll impact any other player on the roster. I think that's fair to say. You can tell me if you disagree with that. But how do you view him defensively still? Because I thought last year he was really good defensively. He looked like he could anchor an NBA defense in the middle already in only his second season. So are you still high on his defense? And how do you think Wendell specifically fits into the changes the Bulls are making defensively?
So I think it was a rough preseason for him defensively, and that was just because of matchups. So I wrote about this, yesterday now, about how like drop defense is really popular in the NBA now, but every team that runs drop, just you're going to have certain weaknesses against it. And one of them is that if you have a center that pops really well, then drop centers are just so far back in the coverage that they're not going to be able to close out. And the Bulls saw that. I mean, in four games, Stretch Biggs shot 19 of 34, I think the stat was. So they're just getting crushed from outside. And I don't think that's reflective of what he's going to be like in the regular season. Because under Hoiberg, they played a much more conservative defense. Wendell was awesome in that defense. I think he averaged like 2.5 blocks a game under Hoiberg. And I think that really allows him to take advantage of his high feel, which I think he does have on the defensive end at least. And just having a position on the basket. I mean, what, Ricky, you might know, being a draft guy, what his wingspan was. I think it was like 7'4" or something. I mean, it was pretty long.
That's right.
Yeah, so I think that he is very capable of being just a dominant rim protector back there. And I do agree with you when you say that he's capable of anchoring a pretty good defense. I mean, we saw it last year, right? So should be able to do it in this scheme as well.
Yeah, I would think so. And like, obviously, they're not going to totally give up the blitzing. And I think he can play both. He can play more conservative. He can do some blitzing. I guess I don't know with the blitzing, like if they can pull it off as much without Chris Dunn and without Shaq Harrison. I know with Hutchinson, Patrick Williams, maybe they could with those guys in play. So I'm curious to see how Billy does kind of mix up those defenses. That's not something that I was really watching that closely. Did you notice, in terms of mixing up the coverages like that? I don't know how close exactly you were watching that kind of stuff, but did you notice anything specific there, or were they like really a heavy drop?
I didn't see them blitzing at all. I think they were just trying to get the nuts and bolts down of their base coverage. They did play some zone, which I thought was interesting, especially like after timeouts. But yeah, it seems like they are like this season is tough, right? Because shortened training camp, they're not going to be able to practice as much because the games are going to be so condensed. So it's going to be hard when you change your schemes like this. But I think they're just trying to get the basics, just trying to keep it simple right now.
That makes sense. I guess let's look at big picture, maybe prediction stuff here. And it's just generally how you feel about how this team is going to do. As we talked about at the start here, they do have a pretty tough schedule to start. We got, I think it's like Hawks, Pacers, Warriors. They might miss Draymond, and then they got a couple game against the Wizards. Obviously with Russ and Beal there, and then like January is just a bitch. They got the Lakers. I don't know if it's twice. They play the Lakers at least once. They got like the Celtics twice, the Mavs twice, I think. They got the Blazers. It's just a really tough schedule to start the season. So I guess, do you see them like getting off to a brutal start and they're just kind of spiraling from there? Do you think they can kind of fight through this and end up, I guess, just ultimately, what do you think they can play for a play-in spot? Like, I guess just your general thoughts on what this team can be this season.
Well, it really depends on what happens at the trade deadline. I do think they're going to get off to a slow start. And they're also hurt. You guys haven't even mentioned Thad Young yet. I mean,
I'd have to look it up exactly. I don't have it off the top of my head. Like, weird, like, leg infection that he said that, like, they caught it early, but this was a type of thing that, like, almost ended Grant Hill's career. So, like, who knows when he's going to be back to play. And we talked about Satoransky, and they finally got Denzel and Garrett Temple back in practice. I don't know how much of the rotation or how many minutes they'll get. But, yeah, and the weird stuff going on already with this health stuff.
Yeah, I don't think Temple and Valentine is going to affect them that much because Chandler Hutchinson actually played really well in the preseason. So I think that he might end up jumping them anyway. But yeah, Thad was probably going to play. Sato, that is going to hurt them a lot more than people think. I just think the drop-off between him and Archie Diakono is substantial. So hopefully he's ready to go again. Like, we really have no idea what's going on with him. The trade deadline is really what's going to determine the fate of the season, because I do think they're going to start out slow. But, you know, if the first half of the season is this tough, then logically you would think that the second half is going to be easier. Although, again, we don't really know because the scheduling is just so weird this year. Like, right. You have these back-to-backs in the same city and stuff like that, and they're trying to do everything around travel. So maybe their second half of the season is also very difficult, and then they're just totally screwed.
I guess the second half will feature, though. Like, I think they play the Knicks a couple times in, like, February, but, like, I don't think they have the Cavs or Pistons on this first half. So, like, those are two bad division opponents, so back half they'll probably play them, what, three times each?
Well, we don't even know. Like, they might cut the season short at that point, too. So there's just so much unknown.
Yeah.
But if they are really bad, this is what I'm saying, like, and they just ship off everyone, then of course, you know, they're going to be terrible. And they're going to have incentive to do that, because at that point you're looking at you're looking at this great draft coming up. Ricky can speak more to that. And then you're seeing that you're in pretty good position. You know, you only have to dump like another 30 games or something, and then you have a real shot at changing your franchise. So that's going to be very alluring, I think, to them. But if they do decide to just stick it out, if Michael Reinsdorf is sick of the tanking, then I do think they're going to be better in the second half. And, you know, that's the point where they make this jump. And then you get the feel good story coming into next year where they finish the season strong and made some noise in the bubble or in the play-in tournament.
What do you think they should do?
I'm not a draft guy, but it just sounds like the top two guys in this class, potentially top three guys, are definitely worth tanking for. Yeah, Ricky, what do you think? I would like to know what Ricky would do.
Yeah.
If they're like, let's say they're like the fifth worst team in the league, you know, 30 games in, is it time to just pack it in and go for one of those guys?
Well, obviously they flatten the odds for tanking. Stefan wrote a great thing about that probably a few months ago at this point, 6 months ago. But I do think that even if they do end the season with the seventh best odds at the number one pick, like, you can jump up with the flattened odds. So
right.
To me, it's more like, what kind of team do you want to be? I think that's the first question that Karnišovas has to answer, because he didn't do anything this offseason. He probably did kick the tires on stuff. Maybe it was by design that he was going to see this through for one more year in terms of the young core that the last front office collected. But to me, like, the thing that is giving me pause about excitement for the season is I just think they're so far away. And I look at the rest of the league, and I'm like, how many teams are they actually better than? And I just don't think they're better than that many teams. I mean, they might be better than like 5-6 teams, maybe. But then after that, there's just not going to be a lot of winnable games on the schedule. One thing I'm excited about is the first 5 games of this season. I think the first 5 games of the season could go a long way towards determining what the Bulls are going to look like this year. They're home against Atlanta, home against the Pacers, home against the Warriors, and then back-to-back at Wizards. So can the Bulls win 3 of those first 5 games? Are they going to go 1-4? Like, that is going to, I think, give us a big clue in terms of the season. And I didn't really answer your question, Steph. In terms of the draft, I think that Cade Cunningham is phenomenal. A lot of people are starting to move off him as the number one overall pick, as Jalen Suggs has been so impressive for the best team in the country in Gonzaga. Cade is just in an awful situation, man, Oklahoma State. That team is absolutely brutal. His brother's an assistant on staff, so at least they kept it in the family. Hopefully they got a bunch of money for everyone to go around. But Jesus Christ, that is a bad, bad team. And he has no shooting around him. I think that he is in a spot where, like, Suggs is in a perfect position to look amazing. Cunningham is in, like, the worst possible position. So I'm not going to move off Cade as number one, just given his pedigree coming into the season. And, like, his play this season has still been pretty damn good, if you ask me. Like, it hasn't been unbelievable. He's had, you know, some inefficient scoring nights. He's had so many potential assists blown by his teammates who can't hit a damn shot. He has terrible spacing around him. So I think Cade is totally legit number one overall. I think Evan Mobley looks terrific as a number two overall player. He's a big man who has just really like special rare movement skills, really quick decision maker, which to me is the second most impressive thing about him. Like, you're not going to be able to teach someone who's, you know, as big and long as Evan Mobley is. I want to say he's like a 7'6 wingspan guy or 7'5 wingspan guy off the top of my head, but he can just move his feet so quickly too. And then you factor in that he can like process things quickly, can make passes. I typically would not want a center with the number two overall pick. I thought it was a goddamn joke that James Wiseman went number two overall to the Warriors this year. Obviously, I've been wrong about these things many, many times in the past, so perhaps I will be wrong about that too. But Mobley, to me, seems special enough to buck the trend of sort of bigs. He's sort of like the exception to the rule, right? Like, he, to me, does seem like a big who's worth a top three pick. In terms of how this impacts the Bulls, I mean, my overall takeaway on the Bulls coming into the season is that they're super far away. I do not think they are close to contending. Like, I talked to a lot of my friends who are not in the media about the team, and I feel like everyone is much more excited than I am. And maybe that's because, like, when Zach and Kobe get hot, they're really fun to watch. Obviously, both those guys have, like, really just great off-the-dribble scoring ability, unlimited range on their jump shots. So I think that that is getting people excited, maybe, at least the people I talk to. And then, you know, thinking that definitely Carter and Markkanen basically can't be worse and should only be helped by the coaching change. So I get all that, but I'm not super excited coming into the season just because I don't see much ceiling in this Bulls rebuild. I don't see much upside. Like, even if everything goes perfectly, they're still going to be maybe the seventh or eighth best team in the East. And it's like, bro, we've been having the same conversation for years at this point. We have to just change the whole calculus of everything. So that's an extremely long-winded way of saying I would be totally fine with building through the draft. I think the number one way that the Bulls can improve the roster, Stefan's wrote about this in the past, is via trades. I was pretty disappointed we didn't see it coming into this year when a lot of first-year GMs, Daryl Morey, for instance, were just like immediately diagnosing their team's problems, making trades. But it doesn't matter. It's ultimately not a knock against Karnišovas, a significant one at least. Like, just like we were upset he didn't fire Boylan immediately, but like, he fired him, so it doesn't matter. I think the Bulls are really far away, and so I think that, you know, building through the draft, and probably, you know, if Garpak's drafted them, they're probably not very good. That's kind of my thought process right now. So I think that, yeah, they have a lot of work to do.
They definitely do. I guess I was just looking at some like win totals and some other projections, and they're definitely not high. I know I was looking at, I think 538, whatever the Raptor or whatever the heck that they call that there. Like, I think that had him at like 24, 25 wins. Vegas has him at like 29 and a half. I'm looking at a few of these things here. Some of the other projections I've looked at. Yeah. I mean, and we saw that you mentioned Zach Lowe earlier, like maybe the 10 seed. I think Hollinger had them at like 26, 27 wins. I guess I always talk myself into being a little more optimistic about them. So like, and I think I've said that they'd go over their Vegas win totals like the last 3 years, and I've been wrong each time. So I might as well just be wrong again with there and say that they could get 30. So like, on the spot here to wrap it up, do you think, Stefan, do you think they go over or under that Vegas win total of 29 and a half?
Yeah, I think they go under, but before I elaborate on that, I do want to get one Garpak shot in there because Ricky got one. So I feel like I should as well. I was just thinking about this the other day, and you know, the reason why I think AK is going to flip so much of this roster is he said the way that he wants to play, which is eerily similar to what Fred Hoiberg wanted. He wanted guys who are good decision makers, who didn't hold the ball, good playoff movement. And you know, Garpak's had 4 years to get this type of roster, and then here we are, you know, after these guys got fired, and they're gonna have to flip the entire roster because none of the guys fit that prototype at all. So I think it's just like just a huge indictment. I mean, I don't want to harp too much on that because all that stuff is in the past and we got to move on. But yeah, just like, it feels like they've just been stuck in the mud for so long, and it's so unnecessary because like, this is what we were supposed to be doing this whole time, right?
Yep, basically. did you want to elaborate on your under pick there?
Oh yeah, I mean, like I said before, I just think they're going to start out really slow, and then they're going to see how close they are to the bottom of the lottery. They're going to start watching these guys in college, and they're just going to say, like, you know what? We have equity with the fans. We have equity with the front office. Like, why not just go for it and lock yourself into at least a top five pick? I mean, what Ricky was saying is what I've heard from other people, where it's not just one guy. It's not just Cade, right? Like, there's multiple guys where you can, you know, if you fall to three, I don't know how the guys are after three, but I've heard the top three is just amazing. So you don't need to get the number one pick in this upcoming draft to really just bolster your franchise. So when they're locked in, let's say, like, you know, they're the second worst team or whatever, when they have such good odds at a top four pick at that point, like, just go for it, you know?
So that, to me, or at least when I'm reading into it, it means trading Zach? Or do you think it's just trading Otto? Like, I'm personally of the opinion that, like, while Otto is super injury plagued, probably not even in good shape right now, like, the team is just going to be so much better if he's available for the majority of the games. They're going to be in a lot more close games. They're going to win more games with Otto on the court, because he's actually, like, sort of a winning player who just fills a lot of needs for the team on the court. So when you talk about, like, selling off pieces, are you thinking Otto? Are you thinking Zach? Do you think it could mean Lowry? And I guess, like, you know, the front office isn't tied to any of them, as you've been talking about throughout this episode.
Yeah, I'm thinking just shop all of them and see what you can get. You know, I really don't think they're particularly attached to any of these guys. And Otto, you know, he's probably going to walk. So why not just, do you really want him to get from, you know, 29 wins to 33 wins? I mean, how much is that worth? Like, and then how much is the pick that you get for him going to be worth 2 or 3 years from now? It's obviously, like, it's not even close, right? So just get what you can for these guys now.
Yeah, can't argue that much. But it is going to be interesting. And I, like, as we talked about at the top, I am kind of excited about the season. And I always talk myself into this team being better than they are, and then they always flop. So I don't know. I guess in this situation, as you guys kind of mentioned, like, if they do flop, I guess I wouldn't be that upset just because of this draft. So I guess it's almost like a no lose spot, which also I think makes it kind of interesting, because you mentioned that inflection point. Like, they could go in so many ways, and even if things go into the shitter, like, there still could be reason to be excited about the future with Patrick Williams, with a potential high draft pick. Maybe they make an exciting trade or two. So definitely a lot of ways that this can go. Again, that's Wednesday, this first game of the season. It's been 9 months since the Bulls have played. As crappy as they've been to watch the last few years, I am excited for them to be back. Stefan, I think we'll wrap it up here. Thank you so much, as always, for joining us. Please let our listeners know where they can find you on Twitter, all your work and all that great stuff.
Yeah, you can follow me at StephNoh, that's StephNoh, and I have a Substack page where I'm going to be writing about the Bulls. It's totally free, so you can subscribe there if you want to be alerted to when I write something new, or you can just follow me on Twitter and I'll tweet those out. I really don't know how much I'm going to be writing this season, because I'm just doing it for the love of the game at this point, really. And, you know, I have other stuff going on where I have to pay the bills. But I'm looking forward to, I feel like I was kind of a downer on this podcast. Like, I truly am looking forward to the season more than others. I think, Patrick Williams is going to be super fun, and I'm definitely going to be watching that first game. And I think I am going to be writing a lot, because I just see so many interesting things that I want to discuss with other Bulls fans. And it's a very intriguing team to me.
Stefan's the best. Also, I told Stefan to put a Venmo link at the end of his newsletter, because I got some generous donations from people doing my stupid Western Illinois project. So if you're reading Stefan's work and you like what you're reading, even if you don't like what you're reading, but want Stefan to write some better takes, throw him some money. That's going to be my plea to the listeners. If you listen to Cash Considerations, give Steph a tip when you read his work. Everything he writes on the Bulls is absolutely must read. So thank you, Stefan, for joining us on this episode.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Love having you on all the time. Great, great takes, great insight. That'll do it for us here at Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. As always, shout out to the Blue Wire Network. Shout out to our sponsors, Indeed and Bet Online, for us here at Cash. Yeah, rate and review us for wherever you listen to your pods. Let us know how we're doing, especially with the season coming up. If there's anything you want us to talk about, you know where to find us on Twitter. I'm Bulls_J. Ricky's at SBN_Ricky. Coming up, I believe our plan for this opening night on Wednesday night against the Hawks, I think We're planning on doing a special live post-game thing on the Locker Room app, which is, I believe it's still only Apple only right now, but just a fun thing where you download and you basically, it's almost basically just like a live podcast, and you can listen to us, you can ask questions, you get involved that way. So I think we're going to try that out on Wednesday night after this Bulls game. So that should be a lot of fun. Hopefully we do have something good to talk about. Hopefully we'll be talking about a Bulls winner, but until then, we got the NBA season starting Tuesday night with a couple games, and the full schedule starts in on Wednesday with Bulls. So thanks again to Seth for coming on, and for us here at Cash Considerations, and Jason and Ricky, we'll talk to you guys next time. Go Bulls!